Welcome to another episode of Three Men and a War Game. I'm Paul, and I'm constantly wondering if there's beer on the sun.
I'm Chops, and I thought we weren't doing that this episode.
I know, but I had to get a MST3K quote in there. Tomorrow, new season's coming out. We have this week, Potter couldn't be with us. He's hanging out on the beach somewhere in Florida and Disneyland, Disney World and all that fun stuff. So he's a lucky guy. So instead, filling in Potter's shoes, we have Ray Flynn and Craig Shipman. Ray, why don't you give us a little introduction on yourself there.
Hey, guys. I'm Ray, co-founder of Third Floor Wars, and I do the tactical article writing for the site. I also manage it and handle the video content in regards to battle reports. It is kind of my big thing right now.
Craig, how about you?
Craig Shipman. I'm the other co-founder of Third Floor Wars. Everything else that Ray didn't talk about, if there's anything left, I do that.
He does all the high skill stuff, like painting and looking good and talking to the people, because I can't talk to people. It's just not a feature.
And yet here you are on a podcast.
Yeah, well, you know, chaos. It's a wonderful thing.
All right. So one of the things that we wanted to do with having you guys on here is we wanted to find out a lot more about Third Floor Wars and what you guys do. Craig, I believe you have an elevator pitch for Third Floor Wars.
Yeah.
So you just trap me on the elevator. And yep. Instead of awkward silence, you're going to tell me about your website and all that stuff.
So thirdfloorwars.com is basically a nexus for us to dump as much content about tabletop gaming as we can. So the initial focus has been on Malifaux, but we are expanding out to cover the other side. We will also be doing things on board games. We're going to try to create, we have been creating and we'll be creating content in many forms. So already we've done battle reports. We've done tutorial painting videos. We've got some unboxing videos in the works. We've done some live streaming on our YouTube channel. So we're just kind of doing content focused on tabletop gaming with really Malifaux being the primary focus, because that's what brought Ray and I together and kind of got the ball rolling on this, but not limited to that at all.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's a passion project. Labor of love for both of us. We're both extremely passionate about miniature gaming and tabletop. Actually, I think it's fair to say just gaming in general, but in specific, miniature gaming and tabletop gaming is a really big passion for us. And so I guess the best way to kind of put it is that we're jumping in and doing everything and trying everything and seeing what works well for us. And like Craig said, we've already done reports, tutorials, and stuff like that. We've done articles. We are trying to host a tour for Malifaux to have a U.S. championship. We're going to be moving hopefully into recording battle reports and content for things like Guild Ball. Shadespire is probably going to make an appearance relatively soon. It's just kind of like whatever's our flavor of the week is going to get a little bit more attention. But Malifaux is definitely our first love. So
I know what that's like.
Yeah, Chops is a hardcore Malifaux guy.
We love it. It's one of the best games I've ever played.
It's still the best game out there.
100% agree. And people who listen to this podcast know that that's my opinion.
Yeah,
absolutely. 100% agree. I've played a lot of miniature games, and I mean a lot. I think it's probably fair to say between the four of us, and then you throw Potter in here, it gets even worse. You know, we've all played, you know, dozens of miniature games combined. And,
well, that's one of the things that I'm kind of curious as I talk to people. I like to find out what your miniature gaming background is. How did you get involved and what have you played, Ray?
So I got involved with I think I got involved the same way a lot of people got involved, and that was with Warhammer. GW got their talons into me pretty early. I want to say it was back in 1999, back in 2000, somewhere in that neighborhood. One of my buddies was getting me really into gaming, and I want to say it was either second or third edition of 40K is where I jumped in, did some fantasy, played that for a long time, and then kind of took a break actually, and went more towards board games and card games. I had played Dark Eldar during that time period, and then Dark Eldar kind of got written out of GW for a little bit, and that left me pretty salty. So, but when I came back, it was into War Machines, Blood Bowl, 40K, Fantasy, Lord of the Rings, and then a bunch of like miniature style tabletop games, because I don't remember even the name of it. It was like Dungeon Quest or something. It was a board game back in the day, but it was like a D&D board game with miniatures.
HeroQuest.
HeroQuest. And I loved that game. And so like anytime something has really pretty miniatures, I'm probably into it, and I'm trying to figure out a way to use those miniatures in some way, shape, or form. And then, of course, D&D, I use a lot of miniatures when I've been a GM since I was 19, and I'm 37 now. So I've been using miniatures for the entirety of that time period. So for me, miniatures has just kind of always been a thing. I think it was a way for me to get away from the isolation of video games, because mm-hmm. I was a big video game player back before internet was a thing. So it was very solitary. And at some point I got to the stage where I wanted to be around people. I wanted to be around friends. And that's what kind of led me into the other avenues.
Okay. How about you, Craig?
As a teenager, was very much into strategy games, similar stuff that most people played, Risk, Diplomacy, but also got like into Axis and Allies and, some of the old war games that were all hexes with little chits for your tanks and stuff. And really didn't know anything about miniature gaming. Now I do have distinct memories in college of going to gaming stores to play Magic the Gathering, because I got into that right when it was came out. That shows how old I am. I was in college. Remember seeing people playing with models on pretty boards. And I was like, what the hell is going on over there? And then it was probably 16, 17, 18 years ago. I was surfing on the web. We're going around the internet and saw like pictures of people's miniatures. And I was like, what? Yeah, I just was astounded, especially when I realized the scale of them. So started doing some research, picked up the starter box for third edition 40K. And it started off for me as on the hobby side. I have a terrible habit of seeing somebody else do something and going, God, I wonder if I could do that. So that's how I got into the painting and the building, and that turned into playing the game. Played GW stuff for well over a decade. Ended up not being able to keep up with the rules changes and everything else going on, and had a series of games in a row where I was just annoyed because I didn't know what the hell was going on. Went back to the internet and did some poking around and came across Guild Ball, which was really my second tabletop game as far as war games are concerned. And Guild Ball blew my mind, because all I'd known up to that point was GW. All I knew was 40K and Lord of the Rings, where Guild Ball was a modern, elegant rule system. And it was different. And I was in love. I played that for a solid year. And that's all I did was paint and play Guild Ball. Don't remember how a box of Malifaux got in front of me, but I was fascinated by the theme, fascinated by the models. And just like all the other stuff I've talked about, it was the models that got me into it, and, thought the cards were a gimmick, but I figured I'd try it anyway. Figured out the cards were, probably one of the best things about the game as opposed to being a gimmick. And really fell in deep with Malifaux. I've been playing Malifaux about a year and a half now. It's ruined me a little bit. It's very difficult for me to play a war game with dice now. Don't understand why everybody hasn't moved to cards, but, I love the game. Love the game.
Yeah. I can't say enough about the static array. People don't understand. Yep. They're like, they run on a bell curve. I'm like, you guys aren't math guys. I'll tell you that if you were, you'd know the static array is superior right away. But once you play it, you feel it and you know it.
I have issues with static array. Yeah, either it's well documented in our meta my hatred for the Fate deck. But to be fair, I got dragged into Malifaux kicking and screaming. It was not really the love story that Craig had. It's like I didn't fall in love with any aspect of Malifaux when it first initially got put into my hands. I showed up and all my guys that were playing War Machines were like, dude, we're playing Malifaux, you should play. And I'm like, I'm not getting into another game unless I get a free crew.
Well, let's be a little fair here, Ray. When you say you just showed up, keep in mind that Ray disappears for months at a time.
That is fair.
He was in Australia for work for like 3 or 4 months. So it's not like it was from one Thursday to the next.
It was not.
Quite a period.
Okay, hold on one second, Paul. You changing three games from one Thursday to the next is very possible.
You're right, but generally it's not necessarily a new one. And
okay.
At this point, most people have heard the Switch because it's fucking Chops telling me about the game anyway.
Well, yeah, especially at this point. But yeah, so actually I think what happened is every year I'm gone, like you said, for 4 months because of work. And because I work in television production. And when I got back, everyone had jumped over to Malifaux and they're like, you need to play. And I'm like, guys, I'm not getting into a new game unless you're going to give me a free crew to play, because I just don't want to buy in. I just bought in hard into War Machines and Hordes. And one of the guys there was like, I got a crew I can give you. So so it was one of those things where it's like, all right, well, now I need to learn how to play this stupid game. And I got addicted to the rules because I'm a rules guy.
Yep.
And the mechanics and the rules really appealed to me. And I was very intrigued by the cards, but was cautiously intrigued. And then when I got the models from him, they were like the little first edition squat gremlin models that were ugly as sin.
Well, I've got a whole bunch of them.
And I could not play them. So I ended up having to buy in anyways because I needed to find an aesthetic I liked. And
did you start with Rezzers, Ray?
I started with 10 Thunders. An all-female Misaki crew. And for anyone who plays Malifaux, you already know that that's bad. Mm-hmm. And I played into an, at the time, Tier 1 pre-nerf Leviticus list, which, again, if you play the game, you know is amazing. And I got crushed and wiped off the table. And that started a one of like 30-40 game losing streak for me in the game. And I stuck in the game simply because I was so angry at losing all the time. And I hated the fate deck and I hated the cards and I hated the models. I just wanted to win more at the game. And eventually I got to a point where the game clicked with me and the tactics clicked. And now I love the game because now I can actually win a game once in a while.
So that's Third Floor Wars.
Yeah. Well, let's swing it back around because I'm actually really interested in the U.S. FOE Tour, and I know it's on hold right now. But what is your like grand design for that? And maybe if you want to talk around why it's on hold, that's fine. But
sure.
Yeah.
It to give you just a brief little history is was really envious of what the UK guys have been doing. If you follow any of them on Twitter or listen to Arcane Reservoir or any of the European podcasts, that UK Nationals thing is just cool. And it's cool how psyched everybody got up about it. I think it really helped feed and grow the amount of play that you saw see happening over on that side of the ocean. And Ray and I got talking. We couldn't do... And I say we, and nobody could do it the way they do it because there's a slight population and geographic difference between the UK and the United States. Mm-hmm. So Ray and I start spitballing ideas, rolled into screw it. No one else is going to do it. Let's try it. So talk to some of the top competitive people, threw my ideas at them and Ray and I were thinking, and we ended up saying, let's go for it. And that's really kind of what pushed us to start thirdfloorwars.com. So I think that it was the FOE Tour and having a place to organize that really got it going. But just a real quick breakdown. Basically what we do is we break the country into regions. Those are, we call them conferences, and they're geographic, and everybody competes within their conference by being scored on tournaments that are already happening. So there's no actual tournaments for the FOE Tour. It's just tournaments you play in normally get sent in to us to get scored. We add up those scores. People qualify in their conference to come to nationals at the end of the year. And then there's wildcard spots for people that scored well, but not but didn't have a big enough conference to qualify within their conference. And then we plan on having 32 people beat the hell out of each other once a year to declare a U.S. Master.
That's awesome. And do you have a convention in mind for that, or would it be like a floating convention?
I think it'll probably be a standalone event.
Awesome.
I think it would be, yeah. So we're blessed here in Raleigh to have a great store called Atomic Empire. And for those that are familiar with it or been to it, it's huge. It's basically the size of 1.5 Walgreens and has more gaming space than most stores have space. So for the first, at least for the first year, if not the first 2 years, I think it'll be hosted there. Raleigh's not the most convenient, but it's not the least convenient place in the world to get to from across the country.
We do have an airport right here.
Yeah. And if the airport is right here. I eventually envision it being in Atlanta, not because Weird's based out of there, but Atlanta is the place, the best place to host something like that, because it is the most convenient place to get to from anywhere in the country. So that's where it would end up being. I envision it though, Chops, as being a standalone event and being its own 2-day thing. And then see what, you know, happens from there. No, I don't want it to be a floating thing. I want it to be, you know, really its own thing.
It's on premier event. No, that's really cool.
One of the other things too, I think that'll help with it too, is that we plan on having a non-invitational event at the same time at the same venue. Don't have to be invited to come.
Which is what I do, because I'm shit at Malifaux. I love it. I'm just terrible at it. I'm more of it for the hobby and camaraderie. So I'd be in it if there was, you know, like just a reason to get into the same room with, you know, 60 other Malifaux players.
I gotta say, that's definitely a thing. Malifaux has one of the better communities I have been a part of.
Yeah, our meta is amazing. I love the conversations that happen in our meta, and I think it just attracts a certain kind of player. And it really helps that type of player is what's attracted to our game.
Yeah, and I think to a certain degree too, I think the game does not attract certain other types of players, to your point, Chops. So because it is, in my opinion, the most balanced of all the war games, some of your min-max guys don't have a ton of success in Malifaux, because you can't min-max and do well consistently at Malifaux. You have to become a good player.
Right, you have to be good.
You can't netlist and win at Malifaux. You have to be a good player.
No, you cannot. I know that for a fact, because I tried it. Does not work.
So a lot of, I think, that kind of toxic, hyper-competitive community that turns me off from a lot of the other war games, you really just don't see in Malifaux. So I reiterate exactly what you said, Chops, and what you mentioned too, is of all the communities I've come across, both here in the Triangle area in North Carolina, it's fantastic, but I've had a chance to interact with a lot of metas across the country, and it's a pretty consistent thing that you always hear.
That's awesome. So let's transition into, you know, since it is on hold for now, into M3E. I think all of us have at least played a couple games. I know we can't talk about specifics, but what are your feelings generally on the state of M3E currently?
Well, I'll start, because I am actually not in the beta. So just working off of what's out there public, a couple things that I'm really excited about. One, I love the idea of pushing things back into theme and rewarding that, or penalizing for being out of theme. The more I think about that, the more I get excited, because really I think 2E devolved into every crew in each faction had 75% of the same models, and then you had maybe a different master and a couple other different, you know, thing. So out of 8 models, 6 were the same, regardless of who your master was, regardless of what the pool was.
Yeah.
Because everybody kind of figured the game out a little bit after, you know, 2 some odd years. What I think is going to be interesting with the fact that there's an out of theme tax being incorporated in there is you might see a lot of the same crews, but it'll be master specific. And I won't know if someone declares Arcanist, I won't know what I'm going to face, because I think a Marcus crew will be a lot different than a Rasputina crew.
Exactly.
So that excites me.
The thing too, Craig, on that is that with the way M3E is going to function, is that not only do you declare your faction, but you're also declaring your master.
Yep.
Counterplays are a thing.
Yeah, so you definitely know what you're going to be up against. So, you know, if you're going against Rasputina, you know you're going to be seeing some December models.
Right, exactly. So other things that I'm hearing that I'm real excited about, the rules changes, the simplification is a big deal for me. I think that the game, when I first came across it, was pretty elegant, but out of just sheer bloat, became a little much, and especially for entry level people. So the idea that they're going to streamline it is great. I'm not concerned with loss of depth because I've seen that process happen before, and it's not either or. You don't have to streamline or be deep. You can have both.
Yeah, it's definitely still a very deep game, but that, like, for me, the biggest plus is universal keywords. My second love is Bushido, which has a very good universal keyword system, and the universal keywords and universal conditions in Malifaux are in third edition make the game a lot easier to play, and it's a lot more approachable for a new player. Well, I guess I can't say that for sure. My feeling is that it's a lot more approachable for a new player.
No, I think you can actually, you can say that, because the reality is that one of the hardest things to do when you're getting involved in a new game is to look at the catalog of what's there and go, oh my God, what do I pick here that's going to give me something functional? What am I going to pick here that's going to give me something that I put on the table that I'm not only going to enjoy aesthetically, but I'm going to enjoy it tactically. I'm going to enjoy it playing it, piloting it. I'm going to enjoy playing, you know, other people playing against it. There's a lot of those different factors. And that can be really hard when you look at a catalog of 1,000 models and go, where do I start here? And one of the things that's so brilliant about the keyword concept, both in Bushido and in M3E, is that you can kind of look at an aesthetic. And then when you found an aesthetic, you can kind of be like, all right, so this is the aesthetic I kind of really like, and it's this keyword. So I can just do this keyword. And I'm pretty solid here. Like, yeah, I might need to get some versatile models. Yeah, I might need to, you know, get some out of tax models, but by and large, here is the keyword and I can go in. And that's going to be very, very good for new players.
Because I agree, Ray. And I think one of the big things that we're going to see is that the old henchman lie of all you need to do is buy one crew box and you can play Malifaux might actually, you know, come back to have some truth to it. I mean, when in theme, you can say to someone, here, buy a crew box and these three models, and you're going to have 50 stones and you're going to have a very playable crew.
Yeah. Right. And I'm not weird, right? But business sense tells me the way that they release the game going forward is there's master boxes as like straight SKUs, and then there are theme boxes to go along with those SKUs. So you'll buy like Rasputina's box, and then there will be a supplemental December box with other December models. So it's like two or three SKUs per master, and that's it. So it's really, really easy for both store owners and consumers to understand and buy the game.
I would hope that that's what they do. Oh, sorry.
Look at what Steamforge has done.
Steamforge
has done in Guild Ball is effing brilliant, and the closer the weird gets to that, I think the better off they'll be.
100% agree. Yeah, and Simon too, I think, deserves applause for their new Song of Ice and Fire, because it has that same thing where you buy a box and it's got everything you need to play, all the terrain, all the rules, all the models, and it's a full like tournament legal list right out of the box.
Yep. I feel like Kill Team kind of also does that now.
It's close, right?
It's close.
There are some, like, you can buy a box of Harlequins and that's true, but it's not true with, unfortunately, everything in Kill Team, but it's getting there.
However, you can buy the faction box, right? So you can buy like the Orc Kill Team box.
You can't get 100 points out of that box. It's got,
okay. Well, I don't know a bunch about Orcs.
It's
to be
got
honest
five
with you.
Burnies.
I
mean, there's no way. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. but I know like the Necron one though, you can open that up and you're pretty darn close to the 100 points.
Yeah.
And
you have five 15 point models. Yep.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that's like, that's very telling, like, you know, that we can look at various war games out currently. And this is a product of the age of information, right? The new millennium, internet, access to everything, crowdsourcing, you know, customer feedback and stuff like that. We know that Privateer Press has been doing their CIDs for forever now for third edition. Even looking in the digital stream, Final Fantasy XIV, the MMO, which got revamped from the ground up almost purely based off of player feedback of how bad the initial release was. Like, we're starting to see this kind of phenomenon happen a lot more, where the barrier of entry is being lowered, but it's not being lowered in an unintelligent way. It's being lowered in an intelligent way that it's a good business model that gets people wanting to play these games.
Yeah, well, and I think the other side is a really good indicator with how we the direction Weird is stepping into. Having lovingly opened two Allegiance boxes and all the other things that come with the Kickstarter, when you open an Allegiance box, I mean, you can play. I've actually now all three games of the other side of that I've played have only been Allegiance box on Allegiance box. And they've been really fun, rewarding experiences. And if that's the direction that Weird is taking with M3E, I think they're on a very good path.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, this is not true of Weird, it's true of everybody. The landscape's a lot different than it was 3 years ago. Let alone 5-6 years ago. So the level of competition out there is a lot higher. You can't bank on people that are just pissed off at GW anymore, which I think is really where games like Guild Ball got a lot of their breathing room from. Same thing with people defecting from Morma Hordes. You now have got a GW that has stepped up their game, not enough to draw me back in, but I can see as somebody who played their games for so long that they're not the same company that I, you know, participated with.
Oh no, they pulled me back in hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah. So it's, you have to Ray's point, you've got to be smart. Mm-hmm. So I am, as everybody knows, one of the biggest fanboys of Weird. And all I'm doing is crossing my fingers because I want them to come out the other side of this, no pun intended, stronger than ever. I want M3 to be huge. I want the other side to be huge because the quality of the products they put out, both from a modeler standpoint and from a game rules design standpoint, they deserve to be one of the big games out there.
Agreed. Yeah, and just for listeners who may not be familiar, this isn't a guy talking out of his ass. Join a Weird place and just search Craig's name and look for things he's painted. This dude is an incredible painter.
I appreciate it, Chops. Even you can better, also, if you search for my name, you can find out how bad of a player I am. Either that or listen to Max Value.
I was going to say,
if he's a bad player, his models look great while he's losing.
That's 100% true. If you want to see even better painting stuff, check out thirdfloorwars.com because he's uploading painting tutorials.
There you go.
Yeah. Sneak that plug in.
plug away. That's why you guys are here.
Yeah. That's a good habit.
Yeah. Craig is definitely one of those guys that he's one of the best people to play against. And every time you look at his models on the table, you're just blown away at how much you wish your models looked like his.
You guys are funny. I appreciate it.
So let me ask you guys something, since I have three Weird fanboys in front of me.
Digitally, at least.
Digitally, at least, correct. We all know that when Privateer Press launched Mark III of War Machine and Hordes, they kind of floundered a bit.
Oh, that was a disaster.
Okay, yes, that is a kind way of saying that it was... It didn't go well.
Right? They dropped the ball.
It was kind of equivalent to Squaresoft releasing Final Fantasy 14 initially.
Yeah. Right? 100%.
Do you guys think that Weird will have a smoother transition? What do you think Weird is doing differently that will give them that smooth transition into M3E?
Well, I'm going to spin this a little bit, Paul. Let's before we jump into that premise, let's go back to the original premise. Is in your mind, what were the top three reasons why that edition of Warm Hordes floundered or failed?
I think the biggest reason why it floundered or failed is one, poor play testing, and two, it like Final Fantasy 14, it was an incomplete game.
How so?
Because and this is where I'm thinking about the new way Malifaux is setting itself up, is that they intended to have the game be played with theme lists, right? That's essentially the future of War Machine and Hordes that Privateer Press envisioned, but when they released the game, there were no theme lists, and they released theme lists one faction at a time. So you ended up with a themeless situation where if you brought a themeless, you're sitting there on 20 extra points
Yep.
And then you have five other factions that have no way to get that and are automatically playing 20 points down. So they released an incomplete game, much like when MMOs were super popular and everybody was trying to come out with the next WoW.
Yep.
Right. Everybody was pushing it too hard and releasing incomplete games and going, ah, we'll patch it later.
Yeah, I and that actually sounds like what happened between 1.5 and 2. Right. Well, didn't they struggle with a similar type of incomplete game scenario where they took forever to transition? People had models and didn't have rules. And
for War Machine?
No, I'm talking about Malifaux. Didn't Malifaux?
Yeah, the wave one, wave two thing where like.
Well, I think that was more the transition to plastic than anything else. Well, and I guess wave two.
But the reason why it doesn't matter, sit. Right?
Right, right, right. Yeah, because wave two stuff came out a year after M2E. So yes, there was a whole half of the model line that was not available.
So
and
here
that was because of changing it to plastic.
So I'm gonna address that point specifically because I feel that point actually kind of addresses all three that you can or the two, three that you brought up with the War Machine Horns thing. Weird has already stated publicly that when M3E drops, you get rules for everything. You get cards for everything. I think that right there is huge because you're not going to run into this transitional period where it's like, well, it's wave one M3E. Here's a third of the models that you already own. You can play with those now. You know, no, it's not going to work like that. So what's going to happen is the way they're going to succeed or fail on this is going to really be purely on the strength of the system, the strength of the crew thematics, and the strength of the crew mechanics inside of their faction. And I feel, and you know, this is where, you know, I have to be a little bit careful because I'm very heavily involved in the beta and I've been beta testing every week, multiple games a week type thing for months now. I feel personally that they're doing a good enough job in beta testing that they're going to avoid a majority of the pitfalls that you might have run into, like what P3 ran into. Because to your point, Paul, with the whole staggered theme release thing, not only were the themes staggered, but they were horribly imbalanced. Mm-hmm. And the models that were being released were horribly imbalanced in comparison to not only the eventual progression that they wanted, which was these theme lists, but what was currently out, or these tier lists, and what was currently out. And so it's one of those things where it's like, like you said, the bad playtesting, or maybe not enough playtesting, or maybe, Craig, you mentioned this earlier, where people were kind of resting on the laurels of GW failing as a company for a while. I think a lot of that may have slipped in. But we have empirical evidence from a mechanical perspective that M3E will at least be solid, because the other side, which is a game that you can compare very directly to M3, to Malifaux without it being Malifaux, is a mechanically solid, very intuitive, fun, engaging game. And if they take any of that with them to M3E, they're going to release a solid product. Add on to the fact that they're going to release their entire catalog of currently released models and then build upon it rather than putting out the wave structure they did in Malifaux 1, 5 to 2. And I think you're gearing yourself up for as much success as you can hope for out of a company.
I'll tell you, Paul, I'm not worried about the rules. Even though I've not read the three rules, I'm not worried about it. The team there has proven to me through multiple designers that they know what they're doing. I'm also not worried about that staggered release issue that you talked about with Privateer Press, because of what Ray just said. I do believe they're going to have rules for everything. So I will tell you what I am worried about. And it's a problem that Weird has faced for a while, and that is distribution. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's not going to make or break the game, but it's going to be a big deal. And that is, when they say the release date is the first of whenever, what needs to happen on that date is I should be able to walk into my local game store and I should be able to buy cards and rules for every model that I own.
Right.
And if I can't do that, that's going to be a problem. Agreed. Now, whether that means I had to pre-order it or whether they're going to have it on the shelf stocked or whatever, I don't care. But if they say it's going to be released on this month, the first of whatever month it is, I should be able to get my grubby hands on it that day by hopping in the car and going. And then my hope is that the logistics that I think they've struggled with it in the wave releases in Malifaux. They struggled with it with the Kickstarter. I would really love to see that go away, which is real easy for me to prescribe because I don't own the company and I don't work at Weird. Right. So nobody runs a business. Nobody thinks they run a business better than the people that have no stake in it. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So by no means am I trying to pretend that what I'm saying is easy. Obviously, it's hard because if it wasn't hard, they would have figured it out by now, because the people that care the most about this problem are the people that own the company.
Yeah.
I think that's a big deal. And I think that will determine how much we get pullback from two. So how many people now who are on a break, and how fast they come back to three. And then I think that kind of buzz will help generate, you know, new blood. So that's my one concern, Paul.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's a valid concern too. I mean, and unfortunately, like right up into the most recent releases, like I can't tell you how late my backdraft box was. I feel like I was supposed to have it in like June and I only got it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, even like the other side stuff, you know, it's like, I understand that's a Kickstarter and things, but it's like logistics. And again, and Craig, you said it perfectly. It's like when you're not in the problem, managing the problem, it's real easy to prescribe solutions to what you perceive is the problem. But it's never really that black and white. It's never that crystal clear. And we only get snippets of information because we're not involved in the business end of it. You know, and there's stuff that they tell us, obviously. There's emails that they'll send out when, you know, they feel it's warranted or when they can. But they're not going to tell us every little nitty gritty detail, because that's honestly, first of all, none of our business. It's their business. But second, it's just kind of one of those things where it's like sometimes it's just too much to deal with from a client to clientele perspective. So it's really easy to say, get your distribution act together. Really hard, you know, for it probably to be implemented. But I kind of feel that the other side was a big learning experience for them. And I feel that that may not necessarily be like what fixes the problem, but I think it gives me encouragement that they now have better tools on how to address it in the future.
I hope that's the case, because to your point, Ray, you can't control a lot of things that can affect distribution, right? We all know where all this stuff is being cast. We know that all the problems that can happen. It's not just Weird that faces troubles with Kickstarters or with distribution of anything that's, you know, being cast in China.
Steamforge with the Navigators, they're both got flooded.
Yep.
For the Navigators.
So
which
funny,
is
actually.
Funny as all hell.
but not to let Weird completely off the hook. Where they do have control is their communication.
Yeah.
And that is both pre and post.
Yeah.
So let's hope that they're a little smarter about release dates.
Yep. Yeah. They need to underpromise those.
Correct. Put it out there and just, you know, if I think it's going to be out in 6 months, and I'm in client services, I do this for a living, which is the old Scotty principle, right? Scotty from Star Trek. If it can be done in 2 hours, you tell the captain you'll have it done in three.
Mm-hmm.
Because the captain is going to tell you he wants it done in two.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to do the same thing. And because you end up burning when you say that the Guild Thralls are going to be out in June. Now they're going to be out in August.
Right.
Now they're going to be out in October. And that, you know, and they face the same thing in the Kickstarter. And then as far as the post communication, I think that they did learn a lesson with other side, which is don't clam up, don't shut up, because that's when things get out of control.
Yeah.
That's when everybody who doesn't know anything starts talking to each other. And that nothing good comes in when a whole bunch of people that don't know shit start talking to
on the internet. Yeah, scholars. That's good times when you get that on the internet. But I mean,
go ahead.
Yeah. It's just bad news. But it's not helpful that, like, if you go to their website right now, it's like in stores in November, allegiance boxes for the other side. And they are definitely not in stores right now.
Yeah.
No, they were supposed to be out in October. November's the pushed back date.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like, and Craig and I are 100% on the same page here, because I work in television production and I deal with clientele. I'm the face that the company I contract through, I'm one of their faces. And so I'm always in the situation where I have clients coming to me asking, can we change this? Can we do this? Can we implement this? And it's 100% the same thing. You know, it's kind of the unspoken rule across the board. You give a way longer time than it should take because you can never predict what might go wrong. And like, I work in like computing personally. So it's like, if I'm setting up a network for a client and they're like, hey, when are you going to have data to us? And I'm like, well, it'll probably be in a couple hours. I'm going to tell them by the afternoon, because we could lose power completely out of our hands. But now we're back 2-3 hours and I can't go to the client and be like, well, sorry, I gave you the wrong time. You know, it's like, they don't want to hear excuses. They want results.
Right. And they're a small company. It's real easy for me to say, you know, just hire the right people. Cause again, it's not my money, but, there's people that do this for a living. They both are logistics experts and there are people who are, you know, community experts and communications experts. And, it might be worth taking a look at that. If they're not already, because those are things that could pay for themselves very, very quickly. In a small shop, it's hard to run things, and get everything covered, when people are wearing multiple hats. So mm-hmm. I would love to see the success, because I'd love to see the company grow so that they can really mature a little bit and, you know, more people can, specialize a little bit more within the company.
So let me ask you guys this. Does that mean that maybe there's something to the way GW does things, right? They don't sit there and go, hey, look what's coming. We're going to have this out and we're going to have this out and we're going to have this out, right? GW just goes, hey, guess what? We have this. It'll be there next Saturday.
So there's good and bad to that. And I think that the biggest issue with that is you have to take into account the size of the companies. GW is an international, huge company that has their products licensed to AAA game designers of various mediums and has a fan base, a clientele base, and the money to be able to sit back on their laurels and go, we're not going to announce anything until it's ready because we don't need to generate our own hype.
And that's not to mention that they control all of their own production and distribution too. Like they know exactly what's happening because they have all the molding on premise.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other point to be made there too is that changed for them. If you remember, again, 2-3 years ago, GW was, you know, literally you didn't know until next what was coming out till the Saturday after that. Right, Paul?
Yeah.
But even they've learned that they can't do it that way. Even now they're starting to talk about things a little bit earlier and put out sneak peeks. And, you know, even they learned that they can't do that alone.
But I think Paul's main point is being on time with your estimates. And I think that's a better thing for Weird to do. Personally,
like, I agree with that. I think there's a middle ground.
Yeah, exactly.
There is the point where you go, this product will be out in 6 months and you're hoping it will be. And then there's a point where the product's going to be out in 3 months and you say to people, it's going to be out in 6 because it by God better be, you know? And that's one of those things where it's like, GW had the ability and like Craig said, they've moved away from this a bit because they have competition, really. That is the reason they had to move away from it. They had to compete with other companies now. But they had almost a monopoly on the miniature market for a long time. And with owning their own stuff and blah, 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 it was easy for them to be able to go, hey, next week we're going to roll out this new set of models. And with Weird, you know, who's outsourcing almost everything that they have, I think they just recently hired an in-house artist. They aren't commissioning their work anymore. They actually have an artist now who's amazing. it's just one of those things where it's like, it's we're slowly making those changes and slowly going to those positions, but there's some stuff that's always going to be out of their bounds, and unless they become like a multi, you know, 100 person company type thing. And I feel that there's just going to be that middle ground where you don't wait until you've got the product in your hand, but you can wait till it's on the boat. You know what I mean?
I agree, Ray. And here I'm going to come back to one of my original points. There's people that have gone to college for this.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. They make a living at being able to handle on-time inventory and being able to handle communications for on-time inventory. It's a thing.
Yeah. I mean, it is.
Sometimes the best bet might not be hiring the nerd that was like, "Hey, I really like your game. I'll run your forums, or I'll pick your."
Schedule. Again, we talk about, we've mentioned this a numerous times, an infinite number of times in podcasts already. It is a small company. Yep. You know, we don't know what their in and their outflow is. So it's like, it's easy to say, "Hey, hire one of these guys," but like a good logistics expert can command six figures plus.
Yeah.
Easily.
And, you know, and like one of the guys I used to live with is actually a logistics expert, and he works for like Cisco. He's worked for IBM. He's worked for some of the major like Newport and very huge companies. And he easily commands a six-figure salary on contract.
Right.
So it's like to hire someone staff and be like, "Hey, can you relocate and manage this stuff?" It's like, that's a lot of change.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
So it just may be one of those things where it's not fiscally in their capability to do it. It's like, we just don't know what their bottom line is.
Right.
So kind of like the best case scenario is, hey, get a business analyst in, figure out where your holes are, plug the holes. But, you know, I work for a company that has 250 people in it, who's in a similar position as Weird, where they need to hire these kinds of individuals, but they can't, or they won't, whatever the situation is. And it's just kind of like it is what it is. They're willing to accept that risk. But that is where we have to have concerns, you know, fanboys or otherwise, is if that risk exists, then there's the potential for negative things to happen.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, we all want any miniature company to succeed because that's our passion. And we want to have as many cool, fun games with crazy models we can paint as we can. And so, and at the end of the day, that's really all that matters here, is that happens, that Weird continues to prosper, and so do the other companies, so that we can keep playing these games that bring us so much joy.
Yeah, and I think the best way to put a bow on this conversation is, like, internet in general, if you're on the internet talking about Weird, just cut these guys some fucking slack. Like,
yeah.
And we spent a lot of time on that one concern, and I think it's warranted. But let's bring it back to some positive stuff. Weird. Because I just popped open the website and saw the Black Friday sale is live.
You already placed my order.
Yep.
Dude, I've painted that Reva model three times.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you had a project in mind there, Craig, from what you can buy currently.
So in general, I have a problem, which is I think there's more things, and Ray will attest to this, there's more stuff on my shelf here than they sell at the website.
That is true. 100%.
Yeah, there's not much left that Weird sells that I don't own yet. So I'm just going to be literally, the only thing I need is that Reva model. And boy, as soon as I saw that, I got excited.
It's so good.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. And it, even this last wave five models in general were so good.
They
have really stepped up the game. And to be back to the positive side, Chops, to your point, and something I was going to do as part of tying the bow of the last conversation, is it's pretty easy to forget when you take a step back and look at the breadth of models and rules that this little company has put out.
It's amazing.
All in plastic.
It's amazing.
These are not resin models. These are not metal models that everybody other. I mean, in Infinity, Corvus Belle still puts out metal models.
And you know what? You know, the main reason I don't play Infinity, I say a lot of the times on the show, it's because I don't have the mental aptitude to keep that entire game in my brain all the time. But I think it's really, I hate metal models. I hate them.
I got to tell you, one of my greatest sadnesses, not to derail us too bad, one of my greatest sadnesses was Black Friday sale for Steamforge was like all metal crews. I'm like, no,
yeah.
Give me plastic, please, God.
Yeah.
Give me plastic.
It's amazing. But yeah, that Reva, I can't wait to get my hands on it and make a video about painting her. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'll be
much like.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I'll say I'll be getting it because I missed the Ulix crew at Gen Con, so I'll be getting the Ulix crew, and I've also been playing a lot of Jackdaw recently, and I want to have a thematic board for Jackdaw, so I'm going to be buying the Hanging Tree as well, and that puts me square into free Reva or Reva.
Nice.
So I'll also be painting her up because that model is glorious.
Yeah.
Much like Craig has said, I have painted that model multiple times in my head. Unlike Craig, though, the reason it's been multiple times is because every time I paint, I go, it's going to look like crap next to Craig's.
Yeah. And if if anyone at Weird happens to listen to this, please do supplemental models for Unicorn Vomit and Pixie Farts. Please. I need a whole Ulix crew that I can play themed out like that.
It's called My Little Ponies.
Yeah, but I mean, I need weird minis. They don't fit on They're a base, so good. Right? Yeah.
I'll just put them in the microwave for 30 seconds. It'll shrink down a little bit.
Shrinky dinks? I don't think so.
I'll tell you, Chops, one thing I do like is how that they've they cut back on what they offer throughout the year for these sales. I think it's great, the local game support that they do, and not pushing the distribution to the local game shops. I loved the promotions they did every month. Mm-hmm. That they put on hold. I hope something like that comes back too. Because I'm one that took advantage of it every time.
Me too. Yep.
Yeah. Because for me, it was just like, yeah, I get a great model and I get to support my local game store. This is a win-win for me.
Yeah. One of my favorite models is my alt Swinecursed that I got for spending a bunch of money that month. So.
And it's a good price point too, because it's like for miniature gamers, you know, $65 at your local gaming store once every other month or so.
Pretty normal.
Thing.
Yep.
It's pretty normal. I mean, it's definitely one of the more privileged hobbies we get to have, where, you know, we're able to invest that kind of money in and time again.
And just get these little plastic soldiers for sure.
Just get these little plastic soldiers and make them ours. You know, I had a guy come up last night. We were playing. We were doing an M3E game. And a guy came up last night and goes, how do you play a game where you have to use a tape measure? And I looked at him, it's for the same reason that I play a game that I have to assemble, prime, and paint my own miniatures, because it's fun.
The analog nature of this hobby is huge for me. Yeah. It's huge because I sit in front of a computer all day.
Right.
And as much as I love playing computer games, I really love not staring at a screen.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, God,
I've been painting Royal Rifle Corps all week. And one of my favorite parts of every day is like the half hour that my wife always affords me to paint every day. So I couldn't agree more. That's one of the most rewarding aspects of it. Oh, I do have another question for you guys, because I know if you, at least Ray, you've played some other side. Have you had any GW boys come over when you slap the Titans down on the table?
I have not yet, but that's because there's not a lot of GW guys at my store.
No.
Not on the
nights we play. Not on the nights we play. But one of my buddies who I LARP with, he plays 40K the same night that I come out and play with one of our other locals, Jim. And who hopefully we're going to wrangle into getting on a podcast at some point, because he's one of the most awesome individuals on the face of the earth.
I know. I asked him. He said, no, I don't want to hear myself.
It's going to happen. I've already told him he doesn't have a choice in the matter. It's going to happen eventually.
We love you, Jim. You're going to come on here and talk to me about Gaslands.
Right? Dude, don't get me started on Gaslands. We don't have enough time. But those Titans are epic.
Yeah, they're
so good.
And
when I first put down the Gorish, I think is how it's pronounced. I was playing Cult on Cult with Jim, and we both brought Gorish, and he brought Homoro Tongi.
Oh my God.
And my buddy playing 40K stopped and looked over and said, when did you guys start playing 40K?
Yeah, I had a guy come over and go, what? He just came over and was like, what the fuck is this? And he's like, and how do I play it? And I've already got him set up to play a demo next Monday.
oh, we had one guy from 40K come over and he went, do you have a burning rhino in your corral? And I'm like, yes, I do. And he's like, can you have multiples? And I'm like, yeah. So he mathed out that you can do something like 25 burning rhinos or something like that. And he just wants to do a crew of nothing but burning rhinos. And I'm like, dude.
Do it.
I'm going to proxy it just to see
that,
if it works.
That guy's brain is perfect for Burning Man. He just wants to watch the world burn playing 25 immolated rhinos.
Well, I got to tell you, as a guy who didn't back the Kickstarter and who has yet to play a game of it, I think one of the smart moves on their part was the entire plug base concept, because that game looks different on the table than anything else being played right now.
Yeah, I had two GW guys watching the first demo that I ran for two of my Malifaux Medif buddies. And when one of them issued an order and moved three fire teams and did something different with one than with the other two, it blew their goddamn minds.
Oh, absolutely. I did a demo for one of our guys the other night, like last Friday. And Craig, we got to get you in on this game, because you will love this game. And that blew his mind too, because it was like, oh, and you can activate, and the way you can play is you can say, all right, this squad's going to get the advance order. So this fire team's going to interact here. Then they're going to move. And now those other two teams are going to attack and light you up like it's.
Yep. They're going to cover and fire. Yep. It's so good.
Oh, it's amazing, dude. Absolutely amazing.
But you understand what I'm saying about the aesthetic of that?
Absolutely.
The other side just looks different when you're walking across the game store.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't look like anything else out there.
And it's easy to describe to people too, because like people come up and they're like, what are all those big bases? And they're like, they're basically hit points.
Yep.
Yep.
You know, they're hit points that can, that do things. So like this fire team here is four models or three models or five models or however many it is. That's the number of hit points that fire team has. And when they run out of hit points, fire team's gone, you know? And they're like, oh, that's cool. And then you're like, yeah, but you can also bring them back. And then they're like, what?
Yeah.
And how much cooler is reinforcing than healing?
It's so
good. Oh my God. Yeah, the flavor of this game is so strong. So, so strong.
Yeah, I'm actually considering, like, I was never going to hench, because the henchman in my local meta is amazing. But if they do a henchman-like program for the other side, I'm in. I'm already I'm setting up to run Tides of Battle in my local store with all my shit. Like, no one else has
awesome.
Anything. I'm getting ready to start running that.
Dude, do it.
Yep.
Do it now.
Yeah, I need the other side to be huge. I love it.
We have actually a large number of players.
Fuck, I'm going to end up playing this goddamn game.
You are. You're going to do it, Craig. You know why you're going to do it? You know why? Because I want you to fucking paint these damn models so I can look at them and cry.
Burning Man?
Craig painting Burning Man. It will happen.
No, what I want.
And then I'm going to
honestly, have the best nerd hard on right now.
These are publicly – these models have been publicly seen. It's fine if I get in trouble. I know they've shown the models. I don't know if they've linked the models to the art, but the new Karai. Oh my God.
The new Karai
model is so
I've heard about it, Chops, but I haven't seen the picture, but I've heard it's amazing.
Oh,
it's
so yeah, that, oh my
that,
God.
That was public art, Chops. You're fine. That was public
yeah,
art.
Yeah, we don't get fired for that.
Well, the models are public too. They had them in a display case at Gen Con that matched the art.
It's so good.
and the fact that like
it will be mine.
Yeah, it's real good. And other things about the other side I can't talk about, which is really unfortunate, but it's fine. Anyway, you need to play it. It's good.
Amazing. Yeah.
So Ray, you know me well enough.
Yes.
What do you think I would enjoy playing?
Balance
of painting and modeling, I should say.
So I'm going to say from a painting perspective, you will probably enjoy Abyssinia or Cult the best. The Gibbering Hordes is really cool. Their aesthetic is kind of neat, and they've got all these little spiky bits and stuff like that. But there's a lot of lack of detail in it, not in the models per se, but just because it's a Whelk. Like, you can't really adorn a Whelk too crazy. And that kind of shows in the Gibbering Hordes models. But, like, when you go to the stuff like Abyssinia, Cult, and even King's Empire, you know, they are humans, and there's a lot of adornments. There's a lot of cool bits, a lot of cool details, a lot of magical energy. And I feel that, like, when you break it down, you'll look at Abyssinia and go, man, that tech is really cool. African nation of Soulstone. It's Wakanda and Malifaux.
It is.
And, you know, and it's just amazing. And you're going to look at those models. You're going to go, that is a motherfucker in armor and a jetpack. And I want to paint that. And I want to snipe people with my rail cannon and my, like, you know, stupid light bike that looks like it came out of Akira. And you're going to be like, that's amazing. And
then you're gonna look I want to play Abyssinia, you fuck.
Right, right. And then you're going to look at Cult, and you're going to be like, it's Cthulhu. There's tentacles and mages and doomseekers and cultists.
Their portal models are amazing.
They are the stocking portals. The mother fucking
like embryonic
chain.
Bodies and
yeah, I'm gonna have to check it
and
out.
I don't know. Adidatos is on his own is amazing. Like they're that commander.
Even Phantom Brahms is great. Yeah. And like how
is that is that the Titan that has the like the dragon heads?
Yes. No, the Gorish is. Yeah, that's the Hydra
that's
thing.
That's Cult.
Yeah, that's totally Cult. But I gotta tell you for me, the selling point, like I actually think from a play perspective, Craig, you'd probably enjoy Abyssinia a little bit more because they're really about using their, about the whole Soulstone generation thing and mechanized troops and cavalry and stuff
they're,
like that.
They're elite.
And
if, yep.
Yeah. They're elite. They're easier to hit, but harder to wound.
Yeah, I just feel like
8-9.
And yeah, I feel like you're gonna just run those guys. You can run those guys in and just go all ham with them, and I think you'd really enjoy that.
They have horses.
They do.
They
do.
Yeah.
Okay. Mechanized horses.
Their, yeah,
I like painting horses.
I think they have two units of horses, right?
They have two units of horses. Yeah. They have two cavalry. And Cult, where I think loses you, is the chaos, which is where it gained me. A lot of the stuff that Cult does is just roll cards off your deck and get random effects. And I adore that. But I can see that being like, God damn it, of course I'm going to roll three crows and get pinned three.
Yeah, they're definitely a little more random. The other thing about Abyssinia is they have the most luck mitigation. They have the most natural card draw of any faction. So you have, and if you don't know anything about the other side, you don't have a fate hand that's by default. You actually don't draw any cards.
You have to buy it.
And there's actually a lot of ways to earn cards in Abyssinia. So that's enough, because they have soul stones. So that's the representation of soul stones is magic, which is your fate hand. Or your control hand, and you can draw more cards with that faction. And they're also, like Paul said, hard as hell to take down.
So, Ray or Paul, either of you have Abyssinia that I can try out?
I think Abyssinia actually, nobody got in our area.
That is not true. I technically got them, but I have already sold them to one of our other meta mates because he really wanted to get Pravlik, John Pravlik. Because he wanted to really get in, and actually, he asked me to play a game tonight. I'm like, I can't. I got to do podcast. But when it gets released in stores, I'm gonna go hard into Abyssinia as my second faction. The only reason I went Gibbering Hordes in alongside of Cult for the initial buy-in for the Kickstarter was because Godzilla was the dual commander.
Well, and Craig too. Know. The other thing is that you also have dual commanders. Right, so you have commanders that can play in either faction on the side that you're using, but you can also bring envoy cards, which allows you to mix and match your faction on your overall agenda. Yeah. Allegiance. Sorry, I'm getting it confused with Mon Pop.
Yeah, your allegiance.
Cool.
Yeah,
it's a clean game. It's a fun game. It plays way faster than you think it plays. Mm-hmm. It plays way closer than you think it's going to play. And it's like you look at some of the stuff and you're like, wow, that's ridiculous. But then you look at what you have and go, okay, mine's ridiculous too.
Yeah.
And it's just like it's just a ton of fun. I would hazard to say that it is the most fun game I have played in a long time.
So I'm waiting on the invite then, Paul and Ray. You let me know when the next game is and I'll watch.
There it
All
is.
All right. Sounds good. We got it.
All right. Well, we've been talking for quite a while and just overall gushing about our love of weird. But tomorrow is Thanksgiving, right? And this will release tomorrow. I'm gonna do a quick edit either when I get up or before I go to bed tonight. So in the spirit of American Thanksgiving, I want to hear what you guys are most thankful for from Weird Miniatures.
Oof.
Well, Ray, you look like you're big on my screen and you're thinking really hard. So I'm going to ask Craig first.
Okay.
I got my
answer, and you're going to hate it, Craig.
I am, as a modeler and a painter, I am most thankful for Weird's ability to have such a variety of models all under the same canopy. It's impossible for me not to find a model in Malifaux in the Weird line that is something different than the last thing I painted. How's that?
I love that. That is great. All right, Ray, I think you've come to a conclusion.
I have. And like I said, Craig's going to hate it. So the thing I am most thankful for from Weird is absolutely 100% the fact that I got to meet people like Craig. So
good Lord.
See, I told you I was going to hate it. So I'm getting to do something I have long dreamt to do ever since my gaming career started. Before internet really was a thing, one of the things I really wanted to do is I wanted to be able to take my passions to people. And Third Floor Wars is me being able to do that. And Weird has been the connection that allowed me to do that because I met such a great group of people and such a great meta. It's how I met you, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not how I met you, but it's one of the things that kind of firmed up our friendship.
Yep.
Jim, who I game with on every Tuesday night, and we indulge ourselves in our obsession with variety of miniature games. Yeah, I met him through Malifaux. Pravlik, Jimmy Molina. I always screw up his last name.
Molini.
He's gonna murder me for that. Jimmy Molini, Chris Blue, who's one of the other henchmen. Don McCormick Plunge, who's another henchman. All of these, it goes on and on and on. John Fox. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could just keep going down names. Christian. All of these people are just amazing individuals that have enriched my life. And it happened through this simple, you know, or not really simple, but through fundamentally speaking, a simple thing, little plastic soldiers on a table with some rules, you know, and I have to thank Weird for that because a lot of these people don't play any other miniature games. A lot of them really are only Malifaux players. And that's where I have that link for them. So
way to make you sound shallow, yeah, Ray.
I can't follow that very well. Thanks.
Are you thinking of following it? Go ahead, Chops.
Chops, you have to say because of Weird, I don't have cancer anymore.
Well, so what I'll actually do is what I was gonna say can kind of elegantly spiral off of what Ray said, and what I'm most thankful for Weird is for producing a game that I can introduce any of my friends to, even if they don't love it at a rules level, aesthetically and theme wise, I can find something for any person that I'm friends with, whatever their proclivities and aesthetic, whatever their gender, it doesn't matter. I can find something that they'll be able to attach themselves to and want to try. And I think for that alone, they deserve a lot of thanks and praise.
Yep.
Paul? Preach.
Well, I'm going to tell you, Ray freaking stole my answer. I was 100% going to say the people that I've met playing this game have been absolutely amazing. So
Leroy
now, because that fucker said it, I have to come up with something completely different.
Johnny on the spot, do it.
And I'm going to say the fact that they have just created two amazing games, right? And because of those two games, people are just going to find endless enjoyment in it. You know, and even though sometimes people find reasons to complain about Weird or complain about a model or complain about a rule or like me, a lot of M2E stuff, I'm like, you know what? These two rules contradict each other and they're both right. Fuck this. I'm out. At the end of the day, everybody can have fun with it. You know, and that's just it, is everybody's coming together
fun games, man. They put out fun games.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of a lot of what the central theme around a lot of the things that we talked about tonight, but didn't actually touch on, is the fact that this is a narrative game. And because it's a narrative game, it affects people in different ways, and different people can get different things out of it.
there's something about these games that I can do that I've not been able to do for a lot of other games I've played. And so I'm a writer, and it's one of the reasons I do the tactics articles on Third Floor Wars. But my passion is actually in creative writing. And one of the things that I was doing for one of the leagues I was in was every time I did a game in the league, it was a campaign game. So your models were getting insured and getting upgrades and stuff, is I was writing stories for the games. And you can literally sit there and have a unique story every time you put models down really easily. And it's not just, I put this guy down, they put this guy down, and they killed my guys. And, you know, that was it. You know, and that level of headcanon that you can get just from putting, you know, pieces of plastic on a table is priceless.
How bad do we want Weird to get its own Black Library?
Oh, God.
Yeah, my henchman actually writes for Weird. He would love being able to freelance a book for Weird. I guarantee it.
I would freelance a book for Weird in a heartbeat. I have so many ideas.
Shout out to Aaron Yoder. He's actually been publishing the Chronicle a couple times.
Nice.
That's great.
Yeah.
One of our guys got published too, Christian, who I mentioned earlier. He got published as well.
All right. Well, Ray and Craig, thank you so much for coming on and telling us all about your Third Floor Wars and doing a whole lot of gushing about Weird and Malifaux and the other side.
Yeah, so. We appreciate it, man. Just real quick, just to get the last plug in, the website's thirdfloorwars.com. Search for Third Floor Wars on YouTube, and you can grab the videos. And then we should have, as soon as we hear when M3E comes out, we're going to be announcing when season one of the US FO Tour begins.
And look forward to more video content and more podcast content coming from us in the coming weeks and months. We're definitely getting some more painting videos out. Craig's going to be doing his stuff. I've got some unboxing coming for the other side coming out hopefully early next week. And, of course, we still got a battle report that's going to be dropping sometime in December. That'll be our last M2E battle report. And that's all I got.
All right. Chops, any last minute thoughts here?
I got nothing.
All right. So let me get into the cleanup here, and you can find us on the social medias at Three Men in a War Game. It's the number three, not the word. Come support our Patreon, patreon.com/Three Men in a War Game. That one is the word three, not the number, just to keep you confused. And thanks to Static is a City for the music, and I don't know, Potter's not here, so...
Well, you guys
enjoying your vacation.
I can tell you, I've been enjoying the podcast, guys. You guys are putting out some really quality content for being as young as you are.
Yeah, it's great stuff, man. Thanks for having us on.
Thanks. That means a lot, Craig. We appreciate that.
Seriously.
Cheers. Cheers.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on, and thanks everybody for listening.
It doesn't seem true. We've been talking for like 8 minutes nonstop. It doesn't feel like it's going to be a problem for us to fill an hour. So,
negative. I could fill an hour myself with the three of you just watching me.
Fair enough.
That's a whole different program, right?